So I want to be sure, in the interest of time, to turn this over to anybody in the audience. We're going to take a few questions. Ashara has the mic. So we got the team up here talking about everything. And if you have a question by any chance that you would want to ask, more than welcome. Okay. If you could say your name.
My name is Oliver Orzel. Hi, everybody. And thank you for all the speakers that are here. You guys are wonderful, and the community that's sharing this discussion, it's great. On that last note, it really caught my ear, because it's particularly what I was interested in coming here, was, you know, the idea of creating a art-focused entrepreneurial center, okay, in urban communities. And I think, since we are in Oakland, and this is a, you know, Oakland-centric effort, there is an incredible opportunity right now, and has been, but more so now, going on in Oakland, where that opportunity is open. Okay? And I know people who live in the downtown area, or people who live in the Lake Merritt community, or out here, see it. Okay, last couple years have been amazing movement. Okay, capital is coming in, ideas are coming in, entrepreneurs are coming in, galleries, clubs, restaurants, you see it. But there's a lot of sporadic movement. Okay, not conjoined by, you know, capital coming from the city, capital coming from the local banks, artists and business owners working together to co-promote each other. Okay, and I think there needs to be more of that effort, because really that's what brings Oakland the flavor that everybody's come to love even more in the last couple years. Not some $50 million, I'm not demeaning any effort by the city, a museum that might be good, but really, you know, 50 artists that got together and claimed Grand Avenue and that area, Art Murmur, brought in 1,000 more people and their money in that community, along with all the developers that are around there. Somebody take notice, okay? They didn't spend a lot of money to do that, but capital followed, okay? So if there's a way to do that, what do you suggest would be, you know, where we can draw power in the community to make that happen? Because I think there's an incredible opportunity for that. And I don't know if people are really understanding that.
Thank you.
Is that me?
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I feel so, I'm saying, you know, we have one of our many sicknesses, I think, is an emphasis on objects, right? Objects more than people. So this, the park where we did Life is Living in Houston is called Emancipation Park. It's across the street from the El Dorado Ballroom in Third Ward. And the city of Houston is about to do this $6 million renovation to the park. And they brought in these architects. The architect is based in, you know, he has offices in Chapel Hill. He's based in D.C., right? But they brought him down to, you know, renovate this park in Houston. They're going to spend $6 million on this physical land, which really is in actually pretty good shape. My question is, after the $6 million is spent, what's left for the programs, right? We make the mistake of constructing monuments to ourselves to make ourselves feel better while neglecting people, while neglecting process. And so I would challenge us all to invoke and create healthy processes to emphasize a healthy model of collaboration wherein the beautiful process yields the beautiful outcome. The reason why the Art Murmur cracks is because, at least initially, the intention was really just to create safe space for folks to witness. And that's a beautiful intention. It's a beautiful proposition. And so the people follow that. I think that's who we are. I'm an optimist and a softie. There's a reason why I left New York and stayed here. You know what I mean? Because I believe in us, ultimately. So sure, there are going to be financiers and banks and, you know, folks that are currently holding capital that want to build monuments and want to occupy those monuments with a certain clientele. And that's really how the gentrification machine starts, is that we create these objects that aesthetically and philosophically don't resemble that which preceded them. Yeah. So, you know, I think it's articulating visions like what you just, you know, like what you just described. And I think it's outlining, or maybe what I just described, and outlining them to propose different philosophies for growth, right? And to recenter or reorient ourselves outside of these testaments to, you know, Ayn Rand and the, you know, and the power of real estate, and instead think about beautiful collaborative processes, which may sound loosey-goosey, but actually is what culture is made of. People that want to be beautiful together, to experience a beautiful thing together. All the great things that we've done aren't physical. The Empire State Building is not such a beautiful thing. This gathering is. So it's that reorientation, I think, around process. And that's part of the start of how it happens.
My name is Aaliyah. And I wonder how you resist, or if you resist, what you create becoming a commodity, or who you are becoming something that's bought and sold rather than, you know, the human that you are.
Was that directed to anybody? You know, like I said before, I think that it's really cool right now where music is, where art is. I'm not a businessman, I'm a businessman, you know, and so I got caught up before in my life as an artist, and was like, in order for me to be able to make the change in the world that I want to make, I'm going to have to become this huge mega thing, situation thing, right? And I'm not so much worried about blowing up anymore. For, you know, I think a lot of artists get really nervous about, you know, I'm supposed to want this, but when you think of the idea of blowing up, it's a whole bunch of hot air. It's just an explosion, right? And who wants that kind of explosion? You want a sense of presence, right? And so I don't worry about it so much anymore because I have a sense of control over it. And I think that the type of art that I'm making, it'd be really hard for it to be something that was so out of my control, you know what I mean? And moreover, again, I'm a real spiritual person and I'm a vessel, and so it's kind of, you know, I and I, like so, you know?
To add on to that, I think as an artist, I think at the end of the day, as true as what Jennifer is saying is, I echo those very same points, but I also think that all of us would like the entire world to know our names. The question mark comes in, what kind of cooning are you willing to do to get there? So, you know, yeah, I want everybody in the world to think that my brand is a quality brand, but because of the way the system is structured, I gotta be step and fetch it fundamentally in my business anyway. I have to be step and fetch it, or I have to be a mogul controlling step and fetch it. I have to be a puppet or a puppeteer.
I have to disagree with you, my brother.
That's fair.
Because I'm looking at what you've done with Afrobeat over the last 10 years, right? And it has been a slow burn, but you know, I see you in New York, and I see you here, I be in Chicago, you know, like as many places as your name continues to grow. And so I think that it's not about what level of step and fetch it. I think it's, are you willing to take your time? You know what I mean? Are you willing to be present? You know what I mean? And I think that what's really dynamic for me is, since you've had your son, you are that much more powerful and more visible than you were even before. And I think, again, it's that I and I spirit. Like, it's you are so your intention is to make people have a really dope experience, that folks can't help but come fuck with Rich Medina. They can't help it. You know what I mean? And so I think that over time, your name continues to grow. It's the same thing with Bamuthi. Like, you know, you've been doing this for a minute, but as we continue to grow up, it's like, damn, Bamuthi put his grown man on, shit. But it's time. You know, and both of these men are devoted fathers, you know, and the legacy is what, when I talk to you guys off the stage, right, the first thing that I hear about or see is pictures, right, of their kids. It's about family, and it's about the legacy that they're leaving. It's not about this whole next level-ness, and that's why y'all are so next level.
Ooh, I'm about to start crying. Thank you.
Can I say something really quick, though, just to that? You know, the thank you.
Yes, twice.
Three times. We don't have, I don't think that we have to be afraid of money.
Word, Adam.
Like, yeah. Like, there's an ethos that we have here in the Bay Area, like just this distrust of money. Oh, you got money? Right? You're not radical enough, you're not real enough, you're not struggling, you're not struggling. How you gonna be in the struggle? You're not struggling, you know? And I think that you can be successful. Here's the thing. We get so caught up in the struggle that we forget we're trying to win it.
Word.
You know what I mean? Like, we can't be so obsessed and enamored with the struggle that we forget that we want to win. And that victory doesn't look like what someone else has defined victory to look like. And I think that's the thing. It's like, you know, I believe God ponders the heart, you know? I believe that there is an intention and a spirit behind our growth, behind those struggles that gets camouflaged by these external trappings, by the, you know, the shoes you wear or the education you have or the, yeah, but where's your heart, you know? And maybe you want to wear fly shoes, you know what I mean? But that doesn't mean that your heart isn't in the right place. So I think that, you know, the commodification of the art is a tricky encounter because we mustn't, I think, penalize our artistic, you know, politically driven, community-minded artists when they begin to succeed, so long as they don't forget. That's something, when we penalize those folks, when we other or, you know, isolate those folks, we do ourselves a disservice. The same way, I think, as when we talk about environment and compartmentalize or isolate environmental activists because they're not green enough, then we're also doing ourselves a disservice. You know what I mean? I move for as inclusive, philosophically inclusive a body towards growth as possible, and to not be just not to be afraid of success.
Word. So that we have a couple of people who have questions here. I had a request to have the question reframed for Rich in regards to Master of the Mix being sponsored by Smirnoff and this idea of commodification. I want to also echo just the sentiments of the sister here with the brothers in regards to fatherhood and what Stephen Fetchett really looks like and who gets to define what that is. But Rich, if you could speak to, you know, just that process and what that looks like, what it looked like for you.
Well, I think the...
Is an example. Is it an
example
for you?
Thank you for saying what you said, because you allowed me an opportunity to put more meat on the point. And the point that I was really trying to get at has to do with the difference between respect within a community and mass appeal. Those are two different, you know what I'm saying? So my point was pertaining to the notion of mass appeal. Like, mass appeal meaning I don't have to physically show up in order for you to take me home and enjoy me. That's mass appeal. Vast majority of the new version of how to get that is a minstrel show. And having experienced a taste of this higher tier of mass appeal, whether that be working with Q-Tip or being on television, you know, the thing that you come to realize is that there's a whole lot of robotic movement at that level that really imitates the robotic movement in corporate structure. So for me to respond to Ashara's point by saying, well, you know, the show was sponsored by Smirnoff, and, you know, that's just a little bit too, you know, corporate for me, and I can't, well, you know, like, I got on New Balance, Kango, Levi's, like, just because you can't drink it don't mean it ain't corporate. We all have it, you know what I'm saying? Like, there's people that go on a PETA commercials, like, don't wear leather, but they eat meat. Like, you know, there's a kind of brown curtain thing that goes on that level where the practicing of what you preach becomes disconnected from the attainment of mass appeal. And I think that in doing that, you do the art and whatever work you've done leading up to that popularity a disservice, because once you set foot in the ivory tower, there's no more gravel under your feet. And being on television and being in for the first time being in a focal television situation and a reality television situation at that, you know, when it was first brought to me, I'm like, you know, TV, reality TV, Snookies, no. But when I realized that I was in a competition with other artists who had similar, most often higher mass appeal and credibility than myself, I'm like, I'm there. Because if I don't look like a jerk on TV next to these dudes, then I'm not crazy. And thank God I was able to walk away from the situation and say that I'm not crazy. So you have to be able to do a dance with the machine. When you absorb yourself within the machine, you become part and parcel. You become complicit. You know, if I know homeboys that shoot people. I think we all can say that in some aspect of our life, whether it be a direct relative, distant relative, friend, whatever. You know about violence. You know about people who carry out illicit things. But you also don't go getting in that dude's car and asking him to take you to the grocery store. You know? You break bread with him at the family reunion. You give him a pound. Keep it moving. I'm gone. Well, don't shoot me. You know? So you have to, with dealing with these corporate entities and dealing with these machines, you have to learn how to double dutch with it for your own benefit until you can get enough capital or movement behind your own thing to continue to push yourself forward at your own pace, which you were addressing. And thank you so much for saying that. That was really beautiful for you to say.
So I'm going to take this question here and this question there. I want to put on the table again this idea that the cultural, there's a quote from Tony Cade Bambara that says the role of the cultural worker is to indeed make the revolution irresistible. That this dance that you all are doing, you know, between the community and the corporate world or whatever, you know, whatever the dance is that you have to do so that we all understand that we are part of this conversation. I just want to applaud you all for doing that work, you know, that the three of you are some of the most amazing artivists in the country. Medina, you know I have traveled to New York to be at Jumpin' Funk. You know this. And Bamuthi, I've watched you for many, many years, and now I have the opportunity to engage you in a more professional, personal level, and Jennifer is my girl. So I want you all to understand the gift that you have in the room in Oakland. I just moved here from Denver, and it's just been amazing. Amazing to be somebody from the town now and just like digging that and feeling that. Okay, so here's the question. Thank you.
My name is Mark Gonzalez. My question is twofold. the name Gil Scott-Heron was brought up, and we all love the brother, but we all know that the brother had demons. And I think of Miguel Pinheiro and his demons, and I think of Jimi Hendrix and his demons, and Billie Holiday and his demons. And I want to ask you, as artists who are respected by many, what do you feel the steps we can do as an artist community to hold our loved ones better so we're not losing them so early, even our most talented and brilliant ones, not just the unnamed ones? And then second, Bamuthi, when you brought up the creative ecosystem, and our first instinct is to speak of economic development, which is a real need of our community, we have an emotional development that we need too in healing from our historical trauma. What are the ways all of you see your work or can see your work being used at the forefront of therapy and narrative therapy and social work? And the healing so much of our communities have to do with each other as well as with ourselves.
I can start, but I feel like, you know. So in respect to the demons, how many artists are in the room? When shit gets ready to go down, don't the hairs on the back of your neck begin to stand up? You begin to feel things before other folks feel things, right? You're sensitive, you know, you're vulnerable. And so sometimes it's their journey, it's their path that they're dealing with these demons, and they're exercising those demons in live and in living color so that in some ways we don't have to. And so I think that in some ways we can be like, how can we stop this? In other ways, I think that it's a beautiful tragedy. I think the other way that we can be supportive, though, is we have to support the arts, period. You know, we just have to show up for art. And we have to think of it as more powerful than money, more powerful than the buildings that we erect. We have to think of it as our elixir, you know, as our medicine, because art informs in a way that other things can't. And we can't bullshit ourselves and think that money ultimately is the end goal, because at the end of the day, there is a song lyric. How many times has a DJ saved your life? How many times have you been like, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to move on? And then you walked into a room and Fabiana Rodriguez has this piece that just made sense. It made it all make sense, you know? And that's not worth money. That's entirely priceless. And I think that we just have to vibrationally show up for that. And that will change some of what you're talking about. And on the other hand, I think it's just a beautiful tragedy that that they sacrifice themselves so that we don't have to sometimes. Is my answer to that question. And I think that it's in tandem to your second question, which is how can we change, you know, this whole ecosystem around, you know, sustainable communities and so forth and so on. My mom's an educator, and I always tell her the difference between my educational experience and a lot of my cousins who are also from East Oakland is that I had access to more different kinds of art. And somebody asked me, what do you think? And then stuck around to hear my answer and respected it. And that was the difference, the entire difference. You know, I went to Head Royce and then I went to Burbank in Oakland. Same, but those were the differences, is that somebody cared to ask what I thought of the creation that was set in front of me. We need to create like a massage circle here.
I totally agree with what Jennifer's saying, and I think that, you know, there are certain people in the world who are put here to make you better. I think people like Gil Scott-Heron and Jimi Hendrix, and I think we can go on across various art platforms, various creative spaces, and there are people who were personally destroying themselves by the minute. But the things that were evoked out of their hands, out of their mouths, out of their instrument for other people to consume and listen to that pain and listen to that pressure that they were going through has probably as many drug addled people as there are out there, as many people who are going through different kinds of struggles as there are. I firmly believe that each of those artists who has gone through that type of, you know, when your demons do destroy you dynamic, have saved a couple of thousand people apiece as well. So it's and in times that feels like a Pyrrhic victory. And if anybody who's unfamiliar with what a Pyrrhic victory is when you win the war, but you lose all your men. So, you know, a lot of the times it feels like that to us because we can't tangibly reach out and touch the people that they saved, just like we can reach out and touch their record or touch their art or touch that moment where we got to experience them giving of that. I mean, in terms of Gil Scott-Heron in particular, I was blessed with the opportunity to do, honestly, 12 or 13 shows with the brother. I've been there days when he was completely lucid and the show was a piece of shit. I've been there on days when he was off on a tangent and the minute his hand touched the keys, it's alchemy. You know, like,
yo.
Other, like, a thing that you just, if you don't, if you haven't seen it and you haven't watched it, you know, if you haven't been with the brother from 10 in the morning till 10 at night, go from lucid, dip off at a weird moment, come back a little bit less lucid, dip off again, come back even more lucid, and then at showtime, that lucidity comes right back out of his hands, right back out of his mouth, and you see the people who are being saved. You know, you see people who came in there with heavy hearts who walk out with their back a little bit more straight. You know, these are the intangibles that I think kind of tie to Bamuthi's point about the how things can and are tied together around us that we don't even notice on a regular basis. I think it's what we're seeing in the end. You know, we don't have the luxury of saving everyone. And some of those people that we think that we're here to save are actually saving us.
Hello, everyone. My name is Eddie. And first of all, I just wanted to say I'm really thankful for you guys. I feel like spirit like brought me to this event. And everything that you guys have said has really resonated with me. So I really appreciate that. When you guys were talking about, especially when you were talking about creating folklore, creating sort of like a new story for our people, for everybody, that really resonated with me. And I feel like, you know, that's what it's all about, is creating our imaginations. Right now we're living the dream, the imagination of these people who have imagined this world for us. And it's up to us to sort of create our own. And I wanted to know what you guys think is the role of drugs in all of this, because I feel like, you know, We often talk about drugs being this negative influence, but in reality, a lot of the music that we enjoy and love has been created by, you know, people who are high out of their minds. And so what, going forward, what role do illicit drugs have in helping us to connect? I mean, these are some of these things are plants, living things that we can connect with and to help us.
What about the drugs? What about drugs?
One, I'm down. This is another reason why I stayed in the Bay Area. Two, but on some Barry Bonds shit, like, you know, right? Because you want to put an asterisk next to Barry Bonds or whatever. You want to put, you know, all the, you know. It's like, you don't put an asterisk next to Bob Marley. You don't put an asterisk next to his music. So I just feel a way about, you know, performing in the hand. I just feel a way about that stuff with sports. Again, the sports. I'm sorry. What time is sports? I don't know. Sorry. Okay. So, but I think that there's to maybe connect
these questions. I think that it is incumbent upon us to create infrastructure around individual and collective health, total health. So, you know, we've been in countries that have maybe more moderate relationships to what we call, you know, illicit drugs. I think do what you do. I think that there's a difference between use and abuse. And abuse leads to harm of the self and of the collective body. And so, you know, to also tie in Mark's question, there's a module around accountability collectively that we haven't quite nurtured or developed yet, I think, as a society. I think that this society deals in imbalance. We deal in the language of polarity, of either or, right? On or off. So I don't think that there's anything inherently wrong with drugs. I think that our individual and collective relationship to drugs borders on abuse because we don't know how to handle ourselves. Correspondingly, we don't know how to heal ourselves. There isn't an infrastructure for individual or collective healing that models for a man or models for a woman how to catch someone who's falling. I think that's the crime. You know, all the artists that you mentioned, we all watched them fall and turned our backs. We've been assuming either that someone else was going to catch them or that it was a beautiful tragedy and we'd write a poem about it and kind of keep it moving. Yeah. So what are the infrastructures that we have in place or that we're constructing that promote a balanced relationship to individual and community health? Are artistic institution or arts institutions or artists working in institution responsible for the construction of that infrastructure that then creates a more harmonious relationship to drugs and falling and other? I don't know. I know that we're in the Oakland School of the Arts next to the Fox Theater in downtown Oakland. I know that this space has been activated by these bodies, these spirits. I know that Top 10 Social is doing a program called The Gods Must Be Crazy. So I know that there are individuals, there are visionaries, there are programmers, and there are facilities that give us the opportunity to construct infrastructure, right? Michael, the whole time, your boy Michael Orange, his whole time has been like, I want it to be this, but I don't want it to be like that. It'll be great if it's like this, but I don't want it to be like that. You know what I mean? He's very clear that he wants us to collectively make something other, something next. And so I think that if we hold ourselves accountable to doing more than throwing parties in the space, that we hold ourselves accountable to have the gathering built around music, but then layer something on top of that, besides commerce and capital. To, you know, are we going to have are we going to have vendors at our event? Sure. Are we going to have folks giving readings at our event? Sure. Is there going to be HIV testing at our event? I know that's really not sexy, but it's so needed. HIV testing is sexy. Reading is sexy. Is there going to be a bookmobile at our event? Right? Like, again, I go back to the idea of the critical adjacency, the idea that we can create the space to have fun and to gather and to network and to partake and to lobbate, right? We can have fun, but what are we building inside of those structures that then lead to deeper infrastructure for individual and collective health? What are we holding ourselves accountable to?
So unfortunately, in the interest of time, we just want to start closing out and respect everybody's time. But let's be sure right now to give these amazing folks a round of applause and all our love. They brought it home. They was amazing. And I just want to say, just
how
really
about
quickly.
How about our fantastic moderator?
Yes.
Yes, sir. Please.
Thank you. And I just want to say something as you know, I do communications during the day, and I respect so much communications in general. And you all are heroes in my book. And I just want to say that Nelson Mandela, when asked, how the hell were you able to get people to risk their lives and do what they needed to do in order to defeat apartheid? He said, well, look, if you talk to a man or a woman in a language he or she understands, that goes to his head or her head. But if you talk to him in their language, that goes to their heart. And you guys have been talking to our hearts for some time now. So I just want to acknowledge that and thank you all for it. Respect. So I want to bring Ashara up here. And we're going to close out. Thank you guys again, really.
Okay, so there are a couple of things going on. We got to hear Jennifer give us a little taste. I want to point out the revival happening tomorrow evening. No, for real, I'm not lying, it's going down. Do not come in there trying to be cute in your heels. It's really gonna be beautiful. And so we'll have the opportunity to experience Jumpin' Funk and the Fela devotees sitting on the stage right here named Rich Medina. But for real, Bamuti, you gotta bust some. Immediately. And this is by request, it's not me, because you know, I'm happy to like, I can wait. But for real, a little bit, you know. Anyway, so that's the first request. Everybody have this card in their hand? Do you see the card? And now I want to point out my brother Abel and my brother Michael Orange, who's the visionary promoter around Top 10 Social. Raise your hand, man. He was very clear that he was not coming to the stage, so we just want to give him love so that he can continue to like channel in his grandparents, his great-grandparents who, you know, set the tone for him to be able to continue this work. But I want you all to just understand a little bit about the culture being the cure. When we talk about how do we get through this, how do we understand this, how do we hold each other in loving space and compassion, is that we continue to show up for each other. And it doesn't matter if it's 10 people in the room or 300 people in the room. So I just want to like shout out all of the artists. There's so many people raised their hand when we asked the artist, raise your hand, that we seriously sit with each other and be with each other. And you know, shout out earlier this evening, my brother friend Brian Terry was in the room, just amazing food activist and chef. Ashelle is in the room tonight, you know, doing his thing. I think tomorrow with Stickman and the whole Earth Amplified series, and Bessa Cantave is in the room. I mean, there are a lot of artists who work in the environmental movement who are really about true sustainable living and thinking about how we collaborate with each other. So please show up at this party. I know it's an elusive kind of flyer. You don't really know what's gonna happen. Don't think that me, Jennifer, me, Bamuti, I'm like, y'all really for real, what's Michael Orange trying to do? We all like, we all know he's gonna show up and do it. And so this is what the channeling spirit looks like. That we actually did not know what was going to happen on this stage tonight. So I want to applaud you all and thank you all for holding space with us tonight, because we make it up as we go, and for Abel for like being the moderator for that. So Martin Luther is going to put it on you. You're not ready. Tomorrow night, Scorpio Blues, Mark Bamuti Joseph, Rich Medina, Jennifer Johns. I'm going to pour libation and then I'm dancing. That's kind of it for me. I don't know. I'm a house hose and Kev Choice. No, I don't know. I don't even know what y'all are thinking, really. We coming to dance. So we getting it in, and I guess y'all will get up on the stage and spin on your head or do something real fly. And with that, I just want to thank you all for coming, and we're going to close out with Bamuti.
You were serious.
I was so serious, man. I was so like, are you got a mic in your hand? What are you talking about? He has this amazing, amazing show, Red, Black, and Green, a Blues, opening at Yerba Buena, October 13th. We all going to be there to support our brother. We're going to be there to support our brother, right? Right? Jennifer Johns is on a trek to East Africa in a couple of weeks to do her thing on food justice and arts activism. We're going to support our sister, send her light, yeah?
Yes.
All I know is that y'all better show up tomorrow and dance because Medina's going to put it down. So that's my last little statement. I love you all. I love you deeply. Thank you. Thank you for being the reflection. Yeah.